Good morning and welcome to Local Matters Health Matters, where we explore the people, practices, and priorities shaping health and wellness across the Upper Cumberland. I'm Dr. Emily Lee.
And I'm Dr. Jennifer Mabry. We're faculty at the Whitson Hester School of Nursing at Tennessee Tech University.
Today we're talking about long-term care and its critical role in supporting our aging population. We're joined by Phyllis Goolsby, Director of Social Services with Grandview Post-Acute Care in Cookeville.
Phyllis, thank you so much for being with us today.
And thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. We're excited to have you. Phyllis, so first of all, can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and your role at Grandview?
Well, I did some math today, and I was looking at how long I've been in.
Oh, don't do that.
Long-term care, and I'm thinking, maybe I should be a resident. But anyway, so role is, like I said, I am social services director. Sometimes I like to identify that as the bucket that everything drips into.
But oh, okay.
We do follow the patient from after they're admitted throughout their stay, coordinate anything, community services, continuation of care. Of course, while they're there, we assess, you know, mood, psychosocial, mm-hmm. Just a broad range of things.
Okay. Physical, social, psychosocial. All right.
Yeah, very, very important.
What inspired you? I know you said that you've been doing this a while. So what inspired you to work in long-term care with older people?
It actually started when I was very young. Mm. Grew up on a farm, surrounded by, you know, there wasn't a lot of, like, neighborhood kids to play with. So, you know, it was always with a lot of elderly people, and I just really took to them and just kind of related to them. And I always wanted to be able to help people. I enjoyed helping them.
Mm-hmm.
So, unfortunately, Tech didn't have a true social work degree.
No.
So I majored in education, which has a minor in sociology.
Yeah.
So
that's actually a great mix.
Yes, it is.
For,
it
really is. For the job you have right now, absolutely.
It is. So that's the path I took.
Nice.
I greatly love it. Yeah.
I think that's missing today a lot, that people do not talk to older people, because
exactly.
I grew up the same way. I was mm-hmm. only child surrounded by older people, and I love older people.
Exactly.
I can talk
same
to
here.
Them all day. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And you learn so much.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So there is so many patients when I tell families, I wish I had done it with some of my elderly, is do a recorded history.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, in talking with patients, I mean, I had patients who remember coming to Tennessee on a wagon train.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Families having, you know, piano when they stop to play.
I
mean, you just get so much. And some of these people, some of the women really accomplished a lot in their time.
I agree.
Like working on stuff for children and the presidents that just wasn't heard of.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, it's a
different time.
Yes, it is.
And it needs to be respected.
Yes.
I agree.
Yeah. So you said you've been involved. Have you been strictly involved in senior care during your career?
Yes.
So a long time. And then how do you think the field has changed?
Oh,
besides what we just mentioned about, you know, not having the conversations like we used to. But how do you think the field has changed since you started?
Well, actually, the type of patients that you get, you know, when I first started out in long-term care, you know, you had patients that maybe been there 10 or 12 years.
Yeah.
You know, people with modern medicine and treatments, they're living longer. Their quality of life is mm-hmm. less. So a lot of times by the time patients enter a long-term care setting, either for rehab or actual long-term care, you know, their illness is very advanced.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's very difficult because, you know, you've got to do a lot of teaching with the families. And, you know, families, it's hard to understand. So, you know, whereas you used to get hips, knees, strokes, patients, you get very, very complex. Simply, it's an extended hospital stay.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And the patients that go to home health are actually the type of patients we used to see.
Mm-hmm. Or assisted
in home
living.
Health. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Those are the patients, yeah. I have seen just, you know, so I've been a nurse 32 years, and that I also you see that transition of we're living longer, but quality of life is different in these long-term care.
And that's one of our goals, to enhance whatever quality of life is left.
Nice.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Very important.
What makes Grandview unique in the care it provides to residents in the Upper Cumberland region?
Well, I think that falls along with what we're saying about the type of patients we get.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, our staff, we have a full-time respiratory therapist, which was not heard of early on.
Uh-uh.
We have a nurse practitioner that came on. Well, we've had one. We've always had a nurse practitioner. We recently had a change in nurse practitioner. She has a very diverse background. So we are very fortunate to have her. She's there 5 days a week. We also have on-call nurse practitioners. We have a wound care Dr. Linda Foster that rounds each week. So we have a wound care nurse. So with the patients and their needs, we have to have a lot of diverse staff and a lot more things available. We have a lot of treat in place protocols where we can start IVs. We can do everything to prevent rehospitalizations.
So important.
Yes, just because the type of patients we get.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, they're very, very sick.
They're fragile.
Right.
Yeah.
Very fragile.
Yeah.
So
you definitely need those protocols and guidelines that you can fall back on and be able to initiate some of those things with a standard protocol versus in, you know, years past. It was always you either had to get the doctor or send them back.
Right. And also another good addition, we have Uriah Bowman. He is an RN.
He was our student.
Yeah, he was a student.
He was an accelerated student of ours, and he's from Jackson County.
Yes. And we
I'm just making a shout out there to Uriah.
Extremely happy to have him. He came on board.
And then Katie Mashburn is your nurse practitioner.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
She also teaches with us.
Yeah, you can tell I'm beaming. I know they can't see that on the radio.
Okay, so for all the radio people listening, our 10 listeners, hopefully we have more. Hopefully Uriah and Katie are listening. No, great people.
Yeah,
we know both of them.
Yes. And, you know, that was Uriah's wish to come back to the community. He started with us in another role.
Yes.
When we were with a different company and went on in the AIT program. And then he's come back home. He's made lots of great changes.
What's his role there now?
He's administrator.
That's what I thought.
Awesome.
Yes. Got his administrator license last July.
Nice. Yes. What is AIT? You said AIT?
That's the Administrator in Training Program.
Oh, okay, thank you. I didn't know what that was.
Yes. I wasn't sure either.
They have to go through that program and through a licensure, and it's extensive. And they have to actually rotate in every department.
Nice.
It's not just you do the administrative end. You do all of it. So I think that his background in healthcare really makes a big difference, you know, see things from a whole total perspective.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yes. And like I said, Katie has been wonderful.
Yes.
And she really works with me, with patients and families. Matter of fact, we've had some very difficult situations we've had to deal with recently, and it's very nice.
Yeah, she's a very compassionate caregiver, for sure. So,
she really cares about her patients.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm so glad you got them. It sounds like Grandview is making a huge impact in Cookeville and our surrounding communities, because I know that patients come from different areas here in the Upper Cumberland. What would you say that what role, I guess, does the team play in supporting families who can't meet the care needs at home?
Well, we try to walk them through the whole process.
Okay.
You know, when they, like I said, discharge planning starts at the front end on admission.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to walk them through the process. Of course, there's a lot of complex factors in that. Of course, when someone, unfortunately, you're either private pay.
Mm-hmm.
or you have a long-term care insurance, which you don't see much of anymore
exactly.
due to the cost.
Yeah, you're about to say you're lucky if you have that.
And then state assistance. Of course, there's a financial and a medical need for state assistance. We try to walk the patients through that, assist them with the documentation that is required.
Which is very complicated.
Yes. And we're finding that what's hard is to educate the families, you know, hey, I just can't take care of my mom, my aunt, whoever anymore. I have to go by there all the time. I have to do this. Well, it's more complex than that. You know, in simple terms, the state's going to view it, does this patient meet criteria for 24-hour licensed care versus support?
Right. Mm-hmm. So totally different things.
Right. Yes. So the state does not take in that into consideration anymore, the need for support. You know,
right?
So
that's usually on the family, isn't it? Like
yes,
private
it is.
Pay to get a sitter, or
right,
or maybe
right.
get home health qualify.
Right.
Yeah,
private duty services.
Oh, so expensive.
Yes. It is. So
do most of your patients then come from hospital setting into your, because you talked about discharge planning starts at the beginning. So to me, that makes me think of a transition care.
It is.
Yes.
Most of our patients, come via the hospital.
Okay.
We have a few from the community that are transitioned in through the state system.
Okay.
You know, if you can receive care in a nursing home
yes.
or you can receive care out in the community under Choices Program. Sometimes that Choices Program is just not, it's beyond what they can do, so
right.
they will transition them in.
Okay.
But most of our patients, majority of our patients come in through the hospital, and then if they have the need for long-term care, like I said, we walk the patients and families through every step.
Okay. I think that's a good place to stop.
Yeah.
We'll go to the next segment. Yep.
We're continuing our conversation with Phyllis Goolsby from Grandview Post-Acute Care in Cookeville. So, Phyllis, how do you address the medical needs of your residents, especially those with, which we said, everyone is chronic and complex and have multiple needs? So how do we, when we're thinking of just the medical needs?
Well, of course, we have our medical director is Dr. Cox.
Okay.
And he makes the initial assessment on the patient. Of course, they're followed through. And again, we mentioned we have a nurse practitioner that is in-house Monday through Friday, and then we have on-call staff. So like I tell most families, you know, in the hospital you see a doctor round. They're asking that nurse, how were they? Well, basically we're the same. It's just the doctor is not physically in the building, but the nurses are continually assessing the patient, calling the nurse practitioner or the doctor.
And there's a provider. If the nurse practitioner is there Monday through Friday, there's a provider in-house.
Yes.
Instead of having to wait for that person to come from the office.
Right.
Yes.
Nice.
Yes. Or waiting for a call back. We've got the nurse practitioner. And, of course, if it's something that she feels like she needs to confer with Dr. Cox, she's going to. We feel fortunate.
Sounds very fortunate. What physical therapy or rehabilitation services are available to help residents maintain or maybe regain independence?
Yes, we have all those programs. So we have in-house, we don't contract, we have in-house, we have physical therapy, occupational therapy, and speech therapy that are all in-house.
Nice.
And we also have a rehab program. For example, if a patient is going to transition into long-term care and they have met their goals with therapy and, of course, under insurance or reasons they're no longer covered, then they're going to continue to maintain those patients throughout their stay. For example, if a patient were to experience a fall, a decline in condition, then, you know, we as a team meet to discuss patients every day. And it may be part of a fall intervention, you know,
right.
Hey, we're going to assess this patient. You know, they've always been able to transfer. They've been able to stand and pivot. Now we're noticing a decline. So, again, you just try to enhance their quality of life and, you know, for them to continue to be as independent in a setting as possible.
Yeah. Or to go home.
Yes.
Right.
And that's our goal.
Absolutely.
But as we know.
Yeah. If they come in really complex to begin with, that is a difficult.
Yeah, and it's a difficult with the families, and that's the medical team meets with the families and tries to, you know, it's a hard thing to understand.
Yeah.
You know, my family member was mowing the yard last week, and now this. So,
right.
Yeah.
It can happen fast.
It can happen fast.
But I appreciate that the team comes together.
Mm-hmm.
Once a week, every day,
daily,
and talks about that patient and that their individualized care.
Yes, we have a comprehensive skilled meeting that we do every day on all the skilled patients, and then we have another meeting to address any changes in conditions, any transfers to the hospital. So those meetings happen on a daily basis.
You mentioned skilled. So for the average listener, do you guys have different areas
we have
the long term?
Yes, okay. We do. So skilled care is, of course, after you've had a hospital stay.
Okay.
And you require skilling service, which could be physical therapy, mm-hmm. it could be wound care, it could be post-op care. So that is traditionally covered by your insurances, which would be Medicare. If you have a Medicare Advantage plan, mm-hmm. with Medicare Advantage requiring an authorization from the insurance company.
Yeah.
And then we have to go through a lot of assessments to continue the care.
Right. Yeah.
Then, like you said, hopefully they transition home.
Okay. And so then there's a non-skilled? Is that what you call it? Okay.
Yeah. Well, then we have... ICF level of care, which is called intermediate level of care. So that is more what we consider the long-term care.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But basically, the traditional route is for people to come into skilled care.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if it's unfortunate that they can't return home, then they transition into intermediate care.
Gotcha. So. Yeah. And that's what you talked about, walking them through that process.
Right.
How that occurs.
Right.
And then mental and emotional well-being is just as important as your physical, your medical needs. So how do you support residents dealing with isolation, depression, you know, cognitive issues? Obviously, that's a big part of it.
Yes, yes. Well, and we're also fortunate we have a psych nurse practitioner that comes in weekly.
Okay.
And she's also local, so she's available on call if we have a patient that really has an issue.
Okay.
You know, we can immediately call her and address her needs. She reviews medications. She makes recommendations. And, of course, you know, we're always going to try, you know, any intervention rather than just going straight to a medication.
Yeah.
You know, and it's hard. Like I said, these patients sometimes, you know, dealing with an illness, they know they may not be able to return home. They may have just lost loved ones. So depression is a really, really, I think,
real issue.
Major issue with the elderly.
Yeah.
Extremely.
Any change? You know,
yes.
I find that... you know, you've lived a certain way and been independent for a long time, and then all of a sudden it changes.
Yes, yes.
And that's hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so having the nurse practitioner, psych nurse practitioner, is very important. And she follows basically every patient that has any depression, anxiety, any diagnosis. And if we just see the need, somebody struggling, even if they don't have a diagnosis, you know, she sees them. They have added a new addition to their services with talk therapy.
Mm. Okay.
Which we feel like will be very, very beneficial
to a lot
of our patients. And sometimes I find in my visits, they just want to talk to you.
Yeah.
And share, you know, their feelings. And that's where sometimes I think... you know, nursing staff and everybody, that's where sometimes everybody's so busy. Mm-hmm. And with a complex patient, you wish you had
more time
to sit down with
absolutely.
Them. Absolutely. But we try.
Yeah. So tell me just a little bit more about the talk therapy. How does that work?
Well, I have not actually witnessed it, but I understand that it's basically through the psych services, the talk therapy is just allowing the patient to I guess, vent their feelings. It's okay. just a different approach yeah. from...
Just giving you a medicine and...
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
I wondered totally if it different. Was kind of like a counseling type session.
It is. Probably. It is. But yeah. a little, I guess, a little less intense yeah. than
more
a counseling session.
More patient-facing.
Yeah, it's know, more
it's,
like
it's
personal.
That person, yeah.
Yeah, just yeah. like we're sitting here talking about healthcare. Right. That's kind of what the talk therapy would be like.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yes.
So. And how that would be helpful, too, because, yeah, I always remembered that... as a nurse myself, my favorite times with my patients was bath time. You know, I actually got to stop, go in, spend maybe 30 minutes with that patient, helping them get bathed. Because mm-hmm. I worked in an ICU, and that was my favorite time.
Yeah.
To sit there and, you know, if the patient could talk to me.
Yeah.
Which most of them could still back yeah. in the day. But, yeah, I understand that. So this is a great place for us to pause, and we're going to come back. Yeah, the 9-minute one goes by. We're going to wrap up our conversation today with Phyllis Goolsbee from Grandview Post Acute Care here in Cookeville. So our last segment, Phyllis, you went through the different types of help that long-term care, which a lot of the listeners may not understand. It's a whole collaborative, holistic approach. So we talked about medical care. We talked about physical therapy, rehab. We talked about the psych mental health. Mental health services that are there. Is there any other services that you guys offer that listeners may not be aware of?
Yes, we try to have a very diverse activity program.
Okay.
We do an assessment of the patient. You look at their interests,
mm-hmm.
What they used to do. We try to develop activities around that.
What's the most common?
Bingo.
Oh, I knew she was going to say bingo. I love
bingo, yes. Okay.
And our director is now doing bingo bucks. And let me tell you.
Oh, they're competitive.
Oh, wow. So once a week, they get.
Yeah,
they,
I want to know more about
they
bingo
They bank
bucks.
Their bucks, okay?
Yeah.
And they get to go to the store and buy whatever. They are lined up. And I had a patient discharging actually Monday. And she said, do you think I can cash in my bingo bucks before I go home?
You know, that is awesome.
Yes, they love it. They love
kudos to your activity director because that's the way I'm going to be.
Yeah.
I'm super competitive.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
She'll be hoarding those bingo bucks.
I will.
Saving up for something good.
I will.
Oh, yeah.
That is a great idea.
And they also try to incorporate movement.
Yes.
You know, they have a lot of...
Yeah.
You know, physical therapy, if needed, mm-hmm. would help them with something. And they try to, you know, have like kickball and a lot of things that.
Okay, they play kickball.
This makes
me
chair.
Laugh. That is awesome.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Warn me not to go on days that you have kickball.
Yes.
So I don't get hit.
Yes. They, yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. They love it. Yeah.
Spiritual?
Spiritual.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
We have church services. Of course, some of those are non-denominational.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if we have a patient that has a spiritual need, we do have, you know, we partner with hospice, and often the chaplain there, or you know, we have accessibility.
Nice.
And some of us can reach out to the local churches, because sometimes, you know, you have someone that just needs to talk to someone.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
we try to provide that as well.
Because
sometimes people haven't been able to attend their churches
yeah.
due to illness.
Yeah.
And they have immediate need to really feel like they need to talk to someone. So
you guys encompass everything, it sounds like. And there's a lot more that you've let us know about that the listeners may not have been privy to
mm-hmm.
because it is a myth. You know, I love talking about myths versus facts.
Right.
You know, we mentioned this actually during the segment break about it's
right.
a myth that you go to a long-term care facility and that's it.
Right.
You just sit there in a
no,
room.
No, you don't.
You don't. Exactly.
Yeah.
But
it sounds like you guys encourage people to
we
get
out.
We do
encourage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But we honor people's preferences. I mm-hmm. mean, if you have been a person that really kind of wanted to stay to yourself, you want to be in your room,
yeah.
watch your...
You respect that as well.
You respect that. Yeah. We do in-room activities if that's your... desire, or if you just like magazines, books supplied, whatever.
Yeah. Nice.
Very holistic care.
It is. So what advice then, Phyllis, would you give families considering long-term care for a loved one? Is there any specific advice?
Well, like I said, it's a hard road to navigate.
Okay.
Because there's just a lot of issues. And I would encourage families to call, maybe visit any nursing facility, talk to people about long-term care.
That's a great idea, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Know what's expected, because there's a lot of financial aspects to that.
And you guys walk them through that, though.
Yes,
like you
said, we do.
You talk about that on the front end, in the intake
process. Right, we do. But, you know, if you're – there is, like I said, a lot of complex issues with financial.
Yeah.
And I would say someone to, you know, contact a financial advisor if you're thinking about long-term care.
Yes. There are issues that you just don't think about until that time comes.
And like estate recovery with properties, you know.
Yeah.
And unfortunately – some families are trying to piece together what their family member has, what decisions they made, because that has not been discussed.
So that's a great segue. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And so, you know, hey, I don't know what they have in the bank. I don't know this. I don't know that. Well, you know, you hate to have that conversation. Well, I'm sorry. You're going to have to know this in order for us to help you.
And I think that's great advice, Phyllis, because that those conversations need to happen between family members and loved ones early.
Yes.
Before they get sick, before they break that hip, before they, you know, their dementia gets worse. Write down your wishes.
Right.
Even if you don't want to tell me, just write it down and put it away someplace safe and let me know where it is. Because then that doesn't cause contention, too, with the family members. If there's a lot of people involved, if that family member's wishes are written down.
Yeah. I try to explain to patients that have a difficult time. You know, families say, well, mom, dad, nobody would ever let us do this. Okay. It's a piece of paper. They're not taking over.
Nope.
You know, you are, as long as you're able to make your own decisions, you have that right to do that.
Yeah.
But in the event that you had something that you can no longer make decisions, it's all laid out.
Exactly.
And your family can step in and help.
Yes. And, you know, as people in healthcare, we understand that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think that it is wonderful to tell listeners that aren't in healthcare to have these conversations early.
Yeah, I think they're very important.
Very important. Just like estate planning, like you said. Or you go talk to an accountant.
Yes.
You go talk to a lawyer.
Yes.
You need to have – these are things that you need to have in place as well moving forward with your family.
Mm-hmm. And they're not easy conversations to have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of families are very private.
Yes.
So
we run into that a lot.
Yeah.
And you're not trying to take away anybody's independence. And
no.
I think that's the first and foremost thing they
think
about.
You're giving them independence.
Yes.
Because it sounds like you guys have a lot of choices at your facility for the residents that are there.
So moving on, innovations. So I know that we had talked about some new things. You've got a lot of new things, obviously, new providers, new resources at the facility. But I know you had another innovation you wanted to mention.
Oh, yeah, something I'm very excited about. And actually, perfect timing, it's rolling out today.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we are very fortunate to partner with Circadia Health. And this is a type of advanced healthcare artificial intelligence. So it is a small device that is actually mounted behind the patient's bed.
Okay.
So this device is a radar sensor, pretty much like if you walk up to a door and it opens.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the technology it uses. So this will continuously actually monitor the patient's heart rate, respiratory rate, motion, and bed exits.
Yeah.
And this is all without any wearable devices. Mm-hmm. I mean, nothing has to be attached to the patient. Now, we do have to have consent for them to use it, and that's part of our admission process, is to be able to use that. It is HIPAA compliant, but this gives our staff... It constantly monitors every 3 minutes. So
That's great peace of mind.
Yes.
For your
so,
staff.
With patients, especially new admits or, you know, with dementia patients, like when they attempt to get out of bed, it's going to notify. It's going to notify if they're repositioning themselves in the bed. And like I said, this is going to have opportunity early on to detect something that is going on with that patient instead of walking in and find them in a crisis.
Yeah,
and
right.
We're sending them to the hospital.
Exactly.
So we are really
without
excited.
Without being intrusive. I mean, you're not tethering them to anything. You're not.
No.
You don't have cameras constantly watching them.
No, there
them.
Is Cause no
Because that's what
camera.
People, you know, no. worry about.
Yeah.
This is
no.
great.
No.
I could see this in somebody's home.
I could too. That's what I was thinking.
For transitional yes. care.
Yeah.
I look forward to hearing how this
yeah,
is
we're
working.
Excited yeah. because, you know, our staff is going through training.
Yeah.
You know, we all got to view the device and see that there's no cameras in
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. I'm.
So the privacy is still there.
Privacy mm-hmm. is still there. And I'm say if you're rendering care, you're not going to interfere. It's going to stop. So it's going
right.
to know who it's monitoring. You know, it's going to monitor your heart rate if
right.
you're taking care
yeah,
of
yeah.
the patient.
I love that.
Yeah.
So will this be implemented with specific types of patients, like those that are more fall risk? Or
it
is this
will be
everybody?
Every patient
okay.
that wants to, that consents to use it.
Okay.
Yeah. So they're, like I said, all the equipment's being installed, staff being trained on the system, and, yeah, early detection is...
That's amazing. Yeah.
Yes.
I'll be interested to hear how that goes. So tell us, as we're wrapping up a little bit, can you tell us how someone can learn more about Grandview post-acute care, or how would they schedule a visit? Do you have a website, those types
yes,
of things?
Yes, we do have a website.
What is your website?
It is just Grandview Post-Acute.
Okay. .com.
.com.
Grandview Post-Acute. .com.
Yes.
And they can get on there and they could schedule a visit.
You can
come.
Call the facility anytime
okay.
and schedule a visit, come in and talk. You can talk with me. You can talk with the admission coordinator, administrator. Anybody's open to show you a tour, explain what we're about. We get calls almost every day.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you get a call. I'm home and I just can't cook for myself and do for myself. And, you know, you, yeah. well, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
But you know where to refer them to.
Yes, yes. So you can give them resources.
They're not, right. They're not qualified for that.
Right.
But here, this is where you can call.
Right.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Any final messages then, Phyllis, that you want to share with the families of the Upper Cumberland?
I would just say don't be fearful.
Nice.
If your loved one needs rehab or needs long-term care,
don't be afraid of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid of it. And I encourage, like I said, to take the time to visit the facilities. And I know it's a difficult time in everybody's life.
It's personal.
Life.
And it's personal.
It's, yes.
Yeah.
It's very difficult.
It is. So, well, thank you, Phyllis.
And thank you.
Thank you to our listeners for joining us on Local Matters, Health Matters. As we all continue to care for the aging members of our families and communities, may we do so with dignity, knowledge, and heart.